Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms Podcast. I'm Diane. I'm a mother of three living in Columbus, Ohio. I'm trying to make room in my life for what matters by getting rid of the clutter and living life with purpose. I hope you'll join me on the journey to think more and do with less. Am I getting parenting right? Most parents at any and every stage find themselves asking this question. Whether you're sleep deprived with a colicky newborn or navigating the emotional roller coaster of a teenager, parenting has its ups and downs, its confusion and clarity, its big blow-ups and small victories. And no matter our family makeup or our children's personalities, many of us experience anxiety over our children's futures and often fear making a mistake. Sandra Stanley is no stranger to this feeling. As a parent to three grown children, plus decades counseling countless families and learning from mentors of her own, she happily shares from her experience and wisdom. Today, Sandra joins me to discuss her new book, Parenting, Getting It Right. In this episode, you'll hear Sandra's advice for learning the four distinct stages of parenting, clarifying your primary goal of parenting, deciding on your non-negotiables, and more. For those of you that are new around here, I release bonus episodes that serve a niche part of my audience. I have listeners of all faith backgrounds that listen to the podcast. This episode is coming from a Christian perspective. So if that's something that doesn't fit what you're looking for, check out the other episode about finances with Jill Schlesinger, or join me back here next week for another conversation that you don't want to miss. All right, let's get into this conversation with Sandra Stanley. Sandra, thanks so much for joining me today on the Minimalist Moms Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Before we get into our conversation, I'm just going to allow you to introduce yourself to the listeners. And I always ask every guest this, do you consider yourself to be a minimalist?
Okay. Well, I'll start with introducing the kiddos and our family. Andy and I have been married for 34 years. We have three kids. Andrew is 30. He's married to Anna. And Garrett is 28. He's married to Danielle. And then Allie is 26. She's married to Clay and just had her first grandbaby 2 weeks ago. So we have little grandbaby Haven. And that's been kind of a fun thing for all of us, of course. So we are empty nesters now. We've had some foster kids in and out, which has been a big part of our personal journey and story for our family, just being involved with foster care. So we've had those kids in and out, but for now we are empty nesters with just our dog. And of course, I just shared with you off the air, but our middle son and his wife just moved in with us temporarily while they build a house. So we have them here. So that's kind of fun. So I guess we're not exactly empty nesters at this moment. So that's kind of our family. I am definitely a minimalist. I do not like clutter. I cannot function in clutter. I think that my love language, if I were making up my own love language, is efficiency, and too much stuff around just kind of makes me feel inefficient. So yeah, I'm definitely a minimalist as it relates to stuff around me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a new book out and that's why you're here today, and it's called Parenting. And tell me, what's the subtitle?
Yeah, the subtitle is Getting It Right. It is in italics and there's a reason for that we can talk about.
Yeah, sure. I did want to ask you, you emphasize parenting with the relationship in mind. And so much of what I try to do and try to encourage listeners of the show with is intentionality, mindfulness, right? Just being present and clear-headed about your values, your goals, what you want. So I really, when I saw that you were writing this book, I really liked that you were parenting with the relationship in mind. So what does that mean for you? And what does it look like when you apply it to major decisions, but minor decisions as well?
Yeah. Well, let me start by explaining where this idea even originated and why it became important to us. Every year, my parents rent a big house on Hilton Head Island, and they've done this really our whole adult life. And we all go. I'm the middle of three kids. My sister's got two kids. We've got our six now, and then my brother has four. And so we all go, and we all go to Hilton Head. But early on in our marriage, right after we had Andrew, he was our oldest of the three. Andy and I were making our trek to Hilton Head, and we started. I don't know, you start a family, you start thinking about goals you know, and goal setting. So we thought, okay, maybe we need some family goals now, you know, that we have a baby. But neither one of us are really concrete goal setters. So that was a short conversation. But we actually started talking about what kind of family we wanted to have. And that led us to realize that in our parenting journey, we never wanted to take our eye off of the relationship prize. We wanted to parent our kids in such a way that when we launch them out of our homes, the relationships are still strong and healthy. And the way we said it was, we want kids who want to be with us and want to be with each other, even when they no longer have to. So we parented with the relationship in mind. So to answer your question, that's what that meant for us. And you're right. It requires intentionality if you're going to parent to any particular goal. And the title of the book, like you said, is Parenting, Getting It Right. Mm-hmm. And we emphasized because we realized that whether a parent knows it or not, they are always parenting in a direction. Mm. And, you know, it may be the obedience direction. You know, we just want our kids to obey, or we just want our kids to excel. It may be in an NFL direction, or, you know, we just want peace in our home direction or whatever. But parents are always parenting in a direction. And there are a lot of directions. And we decided we're going to choose our direction. We're going to decide ahead of time and be intentional about the direction that we're parenting in. And so we decided to parent with the relationship in mind and parent in the direction of having kids that want to be with us and want to be with each other, even when they don't have to be. And that kind of became the lens through which we made a lot of our parenting decisions, the big ones, the small ones. That just sort of became our framework and our lens.
Mm-hmm. I think most people, when they have little kids, when you think long-term, you always want to preserve the relationship. And when they move out, you want them to want to come back home. Maybe not to live, but yeah. Like you want them to come back home and and to have dinners together and to celebrate holidays together. I think that is an end goal for a lot of us, but it seems in the little years, or probably even in teenagers as well, but in the little years, that seems so far away. And I hate that I fall into the habit of yelling, and it does damage the relationship and it does break trust. And so I think it's really hard in certain ways to have that long-term vision when we're in this monotonous little kid years. That's where I am right now. Again, I'm not at the teenager. Yeah. So I'm wondering what creating that foundation looks like in the younger years, and maybe it's teenage years too. You can speak to that.
Right. Well, it really does look a little bit different in the different seasons of parenting. And we can talk about that in a minute. But, you know, when the kids are really little, you're kind of, you're parenting in a direction of safety. You're parenting in a direction of helping them understand that there are consequences for their actions. And you're just, you know, you do need obedience in those early years, if not just for safety, for just preparing them for the future. You're laying that foundation. And so that, you know, when they're younger, it's different. But we all know that life is relationships. So if we're preparing our kids for relational success, the foundation of that is to help them understand that life is relationships. And we know as adults, we can have great jobs, we can have plenty of money, we can have material things, and still be so incredibly unhappy. I mean, we've all met people who on the outside seem to have everything, and on the inside, they're just crumbling. And you know, we all learn early that there is a significant correlation between the health of our relationships, especially our primary family relationships, and how happy and at peace we are in our everyday lives. And we want our kids to understand that in every season of our parenting journey. So one of the things that we focused on, and even in your season with your kids young, and then, you know, like you referred to, things get a little different as they get older, but we wanted to help our kids understand that relationships are so important. And so we kind of grabbed onto the idea of honor. And we just decided that helping our kids understand how to honor other people, how to restore broken relationships, even when they're little, you know, even when they're 4, 5, 7, 8, we want our kids to understand how to restore broken relationships and how to prioritize the most important relationships. because that sets them up, you know, to develop and maintain healthy relationships for life. So regardless of season of life, there are little things we can do along the way to help them understand the idea of honoring other people, restoring relationships, and prioritizing our most important relationships. And that gets us, hopefully, I mean, you know, every day is so cloudy. There's so many things and distractions. It's not like we're thinking all day long about, okay, we're teaching our kids to honor, we're parenting with the relationship in mind. But when it comes time to make some more difficult sort of decisions, if we can view it through that framework, it makes a big difference.
And you say later is a lot longer. And so we should discipline wisely and carefully evaluate it for that later relationship, because this season is much shorter than hopefully than the rest of our life. So can you explain later being a little bit longer? What do you mean by that?
And that's exactly why we chose the it that we chose, you know, kind of our kind of that whole idea, because if we have good relationships with our kids on the other side of the heavy lifting parenting journey, then we're going to hopefully have great relationships with them all the way out in our adult years. And there's so many more of those. So, you know, it's super important. When Andy and I were in youth ministry for a long time, and we saw all kinds of parenting styles. So, you know, you asked the question about disciplining choices being carefully evaluated based on that. We saw so many different parenting styles. And so when we became parents, we read everything. We're both highly motivated by information. We know that about ourselves. So we read everything. We found the parents that we thought were doing it right within our student ministry, you know, parents of kids that we thought, okay, they're doing something right. We got to figure out what it is that they're doing. We invited them to dinner. We treated them to dinner. We invited them to our house, and we just peppered them with questions because we thought, this is, you know, we want kids like this. So what did you do to get there? And so, you know, we just learned so much from those parents. And one of the things that we figured out was that if we intentionally seek out some wise counsel from people ahead of us, it would make all the difference. But one of the things that remained consistent that we learned from stuff we read and from parents that we respected was there was kind of this consistent theme throughout all the different seasons that they were disciplining toward honor, not necessarily obedience. And of course, we want our kids to obey. But if we're parenting toward honor, not obedience, that gets us so much further down the road. And this is especially important as our kids hit middle school and high school, because if you don't have a culture of honor in your home, parenting becomes exhausting. It becomes kind of that game of catch me if you can. You have to have this long list of rules to cover every little, you know, thing that might come up. And it's just exhausting. But in a culture where it's all about rules, you know, you just have to have so many. So we just decided if we are laying a foundation of honor for our kids, that is going to probably eliminate needing some big family policy manual to explain what to do in every circumstance. And, you know, having conversations in your season of life with the kids young, you know, having a conversation of, hey, we don't talk back to mom because that dishonors mom, or we don't steal because that dishonors the owner of that toy. We don't lie because that breaks a relationship and it dishonors the person we're talking to. So even when our kids were young, Andy and I used those words. We used the words honor. We used the words dishonor because it, you know, even though those are big ideas for young kids, it begins laying that foundation. And when we started thinking about the New Testament ethic, where Jesus actually modeled for us how we should interact with other people, how we should do our relationships, we could see that he always related to people in a way that exhibited honor. And the thing he had the least amount of tolerance for were people who were dishonoring each other. So we decided we're choosing honor over obedience. And the way that Jesus said it was love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. It's all encompassing and it's all about honor. And for any of your listeners who maybe have older kids who are teenagers, think about this as sort of a little picture of what I'm talking about. Would you rather your 17-year-old son obey a set of rules that you have to quickly remind him of as he's running out the door to pick up a girl for a date? Or would you rather him have the idea of, I need to honor this young lady that I'm about to take out? You know, honor covers all the bases. So it just calls us to a higher level, and it eliminates that whack-a-mole parenting thing where you're just trying to have a rule for every little thing. So that's, you know, as you think about the different seasons of discipline, thinking about it through the framework of honor is huge.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you more about mylifeinabook.com. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you choose to ask. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. One of the challenges I face with being a minimalist is wanting to be as intentional as possible about the things that I am buying. I do understand that I live in a world where I can't completely avoid purchases. There are birthdays, there are holidays, there are the celebrations. But if I can be more intentional about gift giving, it's so important to me. I've had the experience to gift one to my mom, and being able to gift that to her seemed more significant than something that wasn't as sentimental to her. So if this sounds like a gift that you'd be interested in giving, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code MINIMALIST at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code MINIMALIST for 10% off today. If you're planning to cut back on alcohol this dry January, Recess Zero Proof Craft Mocktails are the perfect alcohol replacement. Recess has meticulously crafted familiar favorites such as Lime Margarita and Grapefruit Paloma, allowing you to savor the flavors and experience of these cocktails without the alcohol content. Throughout January, my listeners can take advantage of a special offer and get 15% off the Recess Mocktail Sampler Pack at takearecess.com/minimalist. Every can of Recess boasts a lightly sparkling mocktail infused with functional ingredients and a calorie count of 25 or less. It's a guilt-free option for winding down during dry January. Again, whether it's the end of a demanding day, a dinner gathering, or simply a moment to unwind, these mocktails are the perfect choice. You won't miss the alcohol, and you certainly won't miss dealing with a hangover. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at takearecess.com/minimalist so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. I'm so happy to partner with ByHeart because their goal is to create a future where all parents feel amazing about feeding their baby, no matter how they do it. Their mission is simple: make the best infant formula in the world. Let me tell you a little bit more. ByHeart's patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk by including the two most abundant proteins in breast milk, plus whole and partially broken down proteins for a nutritious blend that's gentle on tummies. ByHeart ran a clinical trial where they compared their formula to a leading infant formula, improved benefits like less spit up, easier digestion, and so much more. ByHeart is leading the ways in a lot of ways. They're the only U.S.-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed, whole milk, not skim. It's the only new infant formula brand to add a comparison to breast milk in their clinical trial. And ByHeart is the first infant formula company to receive Clean Label Project's Purity Award. So are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code MINIMALIST for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Would you say that honor and respect are synonymous with one another? Or I feel like honor is next level.
Yeah, I think respect is a way to honor someone.
Okay.
And there are a whole lot of ways to honor people. So respect is super important, but it is one of the ways that we honor other people. We honor people with kindness. We honor people with respect. We honor people by being honest, appropriately honest. And teaching our kids to be honest, that's a big deal long term. Mm-hmm. As any parent of a teenager knows, you know, if you've got a kid who is, you know, who's has a habit of not being honest with you, you just parenting is nearly impossible because you never know if what someone's telling you is true. And we really learned that, especially in our parenting foster kids journey, because there's such a self-preservation mode for them because they've had to have that. And they will say whatever they need to say to make you happy or to stay out of trouble or all of, you know, those things. And it made it really, really difficult to have authentic relationships when you're just not sure somebody's being honest. But to your question, I think respect is definitely a huge way to honor other people.
So how do you cultivate that environment then to encourage kids to talk to you when they don't want to? Because with one of my kids, I haven't been able to break through that mindset where you're ultimately in trouble if you lie. But with another one, maybe I've done this wrong too, but with the big things, I try not to lose my cool. I am very open to talk about it. We talk through it, and I actually don't get them in trouble even if you spilled nail polish on the rug, but you told me. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's wrong. Oh, I didn't get you in trouble, even though you knew you shouldn't be using my nail polish. But I'm like, I want to just cultivate that foundation of you can come to me and I won't explode.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I think it goes back to is the stage of parenting. And one of the first things Andy and I learned when we became parents in some of the stuff we read and some of the people that we spent time with was there's different seasons of parenting. And I think depending, you know, the answer to your question kind of depends on what season of life are we in. So the way we break it down is 0 to 5 years old is kind of the discipline years. 5 to 12 are kind of the training years. Coaching years are 12 to 18, and then friendships are 18 on. And in each of those seasons, we're disciplining in different ways. And our techniques and our, you know, all of that has to be different. But one of, you know, I think as it relates to cultivating an environment where our kids want to talk to us, there are several things we can do. And again, it depends on that season of life. But when you start getting toward middle school, maybe we'll kind of talk about that one because it's sort of the middle of the road. I think we have to be students of our kids. We live in a day and age of Enneagram and temperament tests and love languages and all the things. It's never been easier to understand someone else based on how God wired them and all of that. So I think being students of our kids as it relates to temperament and personality is super important as, you know, as we think about how to discipline them. But one of the things that we discovered as we started trying to understand the nuances and the differences between our kids, like you just mentioned, is we realized that each of our kids open up kind of more easily or more readily in specific environments. Like Andrew, our oldest one, if I wanted to get Andrew to talk to me about something, I just needed to sit down and watch a Braves game, an Atlanta Braves game with him or some sports thing on TV. And if I'm sitting there engaged in what he's interested in and we're talking, you know, a little bit, he just had a tendency to respond to my questions better in that kind of environment. And I know that's so specific, but that's something that I figured out about Andrew, my oldest, who's kind of a typical firstborn. Garrett, our middle one, he would talk to me as long as I would scratch his back. So at night, we always prayed with our kids and all that. And then we kind of would, you know, go to the room separately. And one of the things I learned about Garrett is if I want any information out of that kid, if I would scratch his back, he would talk to me as long as I would scratch. And then with Allie, our daughter, I figured out because I was the one at home during those years. When she came in from school, she wanted to download every detail of her day. She just wanted to tell me everything. And she would come rushing in the door like, "Mom, you're not going to believe what happened today." But if I wasn't standing there, if I was off running errands or if I was doing something else and I missed that moment, I missed my moment to hear what Allie had to say. So I think to answer your question, be a student of your kids, understand the environment in which they're more willing to open up and talk. And then we're going to be able to get to the heart of some of the matters that we want to get to with our kids. And, you know, to your point about, you know, sometimes it's just so easy as a mom to snap. You are not alone. We all have that. And really our kids all respond to different levels of that kind of thing differently. And I think that's part of understanding them too, is understanding, you know, what are the effective disciplines for this particular kid? So all of it kind of is in a package together. But cultivating an environment where our kids will talk to us is so, so huge. And we talk in the book a lot about, especially in the coaching years, as they get kind of middle school, high school, we talk about specifically things that shut our kids down or that sort of light them up and, you know, and get them to talk. So that was kind of a fun chapter to reminisce about as we were writing it.
Absolutely. I definitely know that connection, even for me and my husband, when we go out on a walk, it's a great time for us to connect because you're just, I don't know, I think especially with the middle-aged into high school students, if they have to have eye-to-eye contact, it's just too much for that age. At least that's what my friends have told me with older children. So I feel the same with my husband though. I feel like we can get a lot more productive conversation going when we're out on walks. Yeah. And it's kind of like I know you're multitasking in certain ways, but for some reason you can just have tougher conversations in that way.
You can. One of the things that we've discovered too along the journey with our kids was we made dinner time around the table a huge, huge deal because we felt like that was the time of the day that was consistent, that we're all five together and we could have kind of just interactive conversations and they would get to talking, even, you know, just batting around a conversation. It was just huge. And dinner time was never necessarily about the food. It was really about the gathering and about the just being together, having conversations. We had so many, I think what adults like to call teachable moments. We just were able to take care of, kind of take advantage of that time to have these teachable moments. We didn't make dinner time a teaching time because that gets weird really fast, especially as your kids get older. But it was just a time where conversations are naturally happening and our kids are naturally engaged while we're all right there together. And just some cool teachable kind of moments just occur and happen in those environments. So yeah, I think you're right about, eye contact, especially with certain personalities and certain temperaments. You're going to have the kid that wants to be, holding your face and talking to you. And then you're going to have the kid that, is going to just talk to you walking out the door or in the car when you're both looking straight ahead or like you're sitting on a walk.
Sure.
So that's all part, I think, of being a student of your kids or being a student of your husband, being a student of your closest kind of inner circle relationships. You figure out, what are our best ways of communicating?
Absolutely. And I think for people that kids, I'm thinking of older kids that are playing sports or have some type of after school activity, maybe breakfast is a time that they connect and have that around the table time. And maybe that means getting up slightly earlier and being a little bit more intentional with your mornings. But overall, I think you're setting up your family culture there. So you might need shift some things,
That's right. As our kids got older and had jobs and were playing sports, I would look at our family calendar at the beginning of the week. And I would text everybody in our family group text. I'd say, hey, this week, Tuesday night and Thursday night, mandatory dinner at home. So don't make plans. And I would do that based on, their sports schedule or their work schedule or, and it was tricky with three kids. But, we would just try to make it happen, even in those later years, as much as we could. And then, I would tell the kids, hey, we can eat early if y'all want to eat early, if you've got something to do after, or we can eat late if you're not getting off work till, 6 or 7 o'clock, we can eat late. I can be flexible, but these two nights of the week or these three nights of the week, we're doing family dinner time. So it goes back to your whole point, Diane, of being intentional and looking ahead, planning ahead, thinking ahead, parenting just goes more smoothly if you can do that in so many areas. But with dinner time, that was a really big deal to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have any final word of encouragement you want to leave with listeners before we wrap up the conversation?
Absolutely. You know what? I think the thing that I would want to communicate to all parents and especially to moms, because typically we're in the trenches, doing some of the heavy lifting of parenting. I just want to remind the listeners, there is one perfect parent and we are not him. Our Heavenly Father is the only perfect parent. You are going to get it wrong at times. You're going to lose your temper at times. There is so much grace, I think, God gives us as parents to cover some of our mistakes and some of the things that we might not get right. So just be encouraged. Don't expect to be a perfect parent. Don't try to be a perfect. You will not be a perfect parent. You will not have perfect kids, but you can have kids who want to be with you and want to be with each other, even when they don't have to be anymore. You just have to decide what your it is and what you're parenting toward, intentionally parenting toward. And I would like to submit that parenting with the relationship in mind would be a great place to start and a great one to think about.
Well, Sandra, where can listeners connect with you or buy a copy of this new book?
Well, the book is coming out in January. It's on Amazon now, pre-selling. Andy and I, did the Audible version ourselves. So I read my chapters, he read his chapters. So that could be a fun way to do it. We're hoping that it'll be a great tool for people who are in small groups and that kind of stuff. But that'll be coming out in January. Meanwhile, we're both on social media, all the normal social media outlets, and love to kind of share ideas there as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your encouragement today. I've started making my way through your book and it's been helpful so far. So I can't wait to finish it and start applying some of these principles in our parenting and talk to my husband about it. So I appreciate you writing it and for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Diane. It's a pleasure to meet you.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links, resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at minimalistmomspodcast.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as my book, Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity, or other ways to connect or work with me online. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends on social media is very helpful and will encourage others on their journey to think more and do with less.